Florida locks down under a safer at home order. Local hospitals brace for a surge of COVID-19 patients. And after WJCT asked some questions, Publix changed its policy on workers wearing protective gear. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, our top stories on our Friday Media Roundtable. Already getting your calls. Join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, how the historic Florida Theater is surviving this pandemic. We'll speak with its leader, Numa Saisalin. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss one heck of a news week, we welcome Mark Woods of the Florida Times-Union. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. Also with us, regular contributor and board member Charles Griggs. Good morning to you, Charles.
Good morning, Melissa.
And here in studio with me, WJCT's own Sky LeBron.
Morning, Melissa.
We are putting all guests on the phone except essential employees right now due to social distancing measures. So lots to talk about this week. And of course, all of it has to do with the COVID crisis. To bring you up to date from overnight, there are now 9,008 confirmed cases in Florida, 144 reported deaths. Locally, we have 487 cases. In Duval County, deaths related to the virus jumped to 9 last night. A new death was also reported in Clay County, bringing its total to 6. And there's a report that an infant in St. Johns County is sick with COVID-19, too. To try to slow the spread of disease, today both the city of Jacksonville and the state of Florida are under a safer at home order. What that means is you need to just stay home unless you must go out to places like the grocery store or an essential business. Now, Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry issued the local stay at home order before the governor did. Governor Ron DeSantis was under a lot of pressure when he finally executed the order. He's been accused of dragging his feet on this. And then late Thursday, DeSantis said his order supersedes local ones, even if they had tougher restrictions. There's also an exemption for churches and religious organizations to meet in large numbers. We want your calls. It's 549-2937 to join us, 549-2937, as we talk about the latest news around the COVID crisis. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. Charles Griggs, let's begin with you. The governor under a lot of pressure when he finally executed this order for the state.
Yeah, Melissa, this is something that people have been calling for a significant period of time. And it appears to a lot of people who've been observing that the governor has been trying to walk a fine line between agreeing with some of the comments that are coming from the podium on the federal level and trying to find a way to legislate on a response locally here in Florida. But what we've seen is we've seen a lot of the communities here in Florida that have taken their own lead and deciding that they're not going to wait on the state to figure out which side of the aisle, the prevention aisle, they're going to play. They've been fairly aggressive in most cases of trying to implement their own standards for protecting the public. And that's where you see the pressure come from to the governor on trying to put his response together, because it has not been consistent in a lot of ways with a lot of the things that these local communities would like to see, in particular Jacksonville.
Yeah, absolutely. And a new story just crossing right now, Mark Woods. Apparently the governor is fighting an attempt to require him to appear for a deposition in a lawsuit that seeks to force statewide beach closures because of coronavirus. We've closed the beaches in our area, although St. Johns County was very late to the party to do that, but they aren't closed all over the state. And there's also a controversial exemption for religious organizations to continue meeting. A pastor in Tampa was actually arrested when he refused to shut down his church. And the governor's executive order is superseding local stay-at-home orders that are stricter, perhaps, than what he's calling for.
Yeah, right. Those are probably the kind of the two highest profile things that kind of made national news, the beaches and the churches. And, kind of struck me that some ways there's a few similarities with we're used to hurricanes and hunkering down for those. And the big difference is if somebody goes out and does something stupid, they're kind of, risking their own life. If they're out in the surf, I guess they may endanger first responders or somebody that might have to rescue them. But here, you know, if people gather in big groups, if they go to the beach, it's not just their lives they're endangering. It's all of ours. I mean, that's, you know, I hate to see that. You know, at first when they talked about closing the beaches, I thought, no, that we need those places. We need these where we can go and take a walk and rest. But, you know, people were still cramming the beaches full. So I think they needed to be closed all over the state. And, you know, you hate to see that, but this month is so critical. We need to take it as seriously as possible.
Yeah, we really do. Sky LeBron, these next 4 weeks, we're going to continue to see a surge in positive diagnoses and a surge in people getting really sick. And local officials here in Jacksonville and around the state, they're bracing for this.
Yeah, and with that, I mean, there's still a couple exemptions in that statewide order and the local order that, you know, are a bit, they bring up some questions. You got to look at some recreational activities. One of the questions that I asked the mayor yesterday was regarding golf courses remaining open and being considered essential businesses. You also look at a lot of water sports and waterways are going to remain open. So that leaves avenues open for boating and for, you know, kayaking, different things where you can still see people coming together if they're not heeding the warnings of this stay-at-home order.
Yeah, Charles, you know, people continue to send us videos of public spaces around town where people are flagrantly violating the stay-at-home order. We'll see how things go today. But it's an order, but it's not necessarily legally enforceable for everyone.
Yeah, it's an order, and if people take the spirit of the order and use that, then they will, you know, they will protect themselves, not only themselves, but other members of the public. There are ways that you can still engage, and I think that people are they are smart enough in most cases to be able to smartly engage in social activity during social distancing. Like I've seen some examples of some folks. I think it was on the CBS Morning News Sunday, where people are spacing their chairs out in parking lots and having conversations, and people are having walks, but they're distancing themselves from each other. The problem comes in where you get too comfortable with being too relaxed, and you start to, because you're familiar with another person, you start to congregate too close to that person. And if that person is not a part of your everyday household, then you're actually putting yourself at risk. So you need to make sure you adhere to those particular policies. And for example, like now, the new normal in most of our convenience stores and grocery stores is they already have the 6 feet distance already separated out for you. So there's no ambiguity there. You know, they are actually saying to you, this is how far apart we want you to be in the checkout line. And so when you see that, it makes it a little easier for you to walk the aisles, you know, if you have to go to the grocery store, to practice those social distancing measures. Unfortunately, we have a lot of people who just get too comfortable with being out because we have beautiful weather going on right now here in Florida. And it just makes it very easy to break the rules. But people need to adhere to the rules so we can mitigate this problem as soon as possible.
And it's our Friday Media Roundtable with Mark Woods, Charles Griggs, Sky LeBron, and yours truly, and your calls. How have you been dealing with coronavirus and the local and statewide lockdown? What are your thoughts this morning? 549-2937. Susan is in Mandarin right now. Hi, Susan. Good morning.
Hi. I know y'all are going to disagree with me, but I'm going to go ahead and ask this question. I've been Googling it, and I can't find where any cases of anybody coming to Florida and hanging out at the beaches are testing positive in massive amounts. I've seen a church, choir practice church in Seattle, where 45 of the 60 people that attended all tested positive. There was a synagogue in New York where a large congregation tested positive. I even read an article about South Korea, where 60% of the positive cases in South Korea are all from one church. So I don't understand. I think I saw it in a WJCT article that Mayor Curry is still letting churches meet as long as it's 50 people and they promise to stay 6 feet apart. So I feel like the information that's coming out is inconsistent. If we promise to go to the beach and stay 6 feet apart and walk, why are we not allowed to do that? And he's allowing people to go to churches if they promise to stay 6 feet apart. I mean, a lot of us don't go to church, so we feel, I just feel like I'm being, I know this is, I really feel for the healthcare workers and the people working at grocery stores. I'm very grateful for all of that. So I just, I don't want it to sound too selfish.
No, I understand, Susan. And let me try to answer that question for you, because people have, you're not the only one to ask that question. It's my understanding that they finally made the decision to close the beaches because at high tide, maintaining the 6 foot rule was too difficult. And that, and I thank you for your call, Susan, that people, Mark Woods, that people were just bunching up too much on the beach at high tide, and they realized they had to close the beaches because you can't maintain a proper social distancing depending on the tides.
Yeah, right. I hate to see the beaches closed, and I wish they could be open and people walking, 6 feet apart, but that just wasn't happening. And once you saw those images, I think it had to happen. You know, I think it is important to get outside and not stay in the house. You know, the mayor emphasized that you can still go for walks. You should get out and, ride a bike, exercise, do it responsibly. I mean, I'm kind of torn. I try and every weekend get out on my paddleboard. And we've tried to limit, we've continued to do that. But we drive separately. We go in a group of two or three, and we're never within 6 feet of each other, and we're not touching each other's board. So I feel like part of me feels a little guilty that I'm out and about when I know so much is going on. But the other part, I feel like it's important for all of us to keep our mental health. So I think it's, as Charles said, these are guidelines that we just need to be smart and help each other out by sticking to.
Sky LeBron.
Yeah, I think the main thing about this is just, can we trust that a lot of people on a beach are going to remain 6 feet apart? And the other big thing about this is, the governor of Georgia got bashed because he just found this out a couple days ago. You can remain completely asymptomatic. You could feel fine and still go to the beach and think, okay, well, I don't have it, so I'm not going to transmit it. And you could still transmit it. So it's important to remember that just because you're feeling okay, it doesn't mean that you should be going out and about, because you could still possibly give it to somebody else.
Let's go to Linda in Mandarin. Hello, Linda.
Hey, good morning. What's been frustrating and illuminating in this whole process is you cannot hide from this virus. Our leaders are being stripped bare, like Brian Kemp or whatever his name is in Georgia. That's the level of denial or ignorance we didn't know. I haven't always been a fan of Mayor Curry, but I applaud him for his aggressive action. I would ask for him to push back on the governor. For local rule, the governor is slow to the party. He shouldn't be able to tell us that we can have thousands of people in church as a carve out because he wants to get reelected in 2 years. This is illuminating. I am at home. I'm about to go for a walk, so I've been stir crazy. I haven't been out of the house in 3 days. But I want everybody to take this seriously, and I don't want carve outs for people, because I can't protect myself if I get exposed. Because I live by myself, and if I drop in my house, nobody will know for days. So please, people, take this seriously. Thanks, guys, for keeping us connected by this program.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you. Bye. It's 549-2937. Rick is in Jack's Beach. Hi, Rick. What are your thoughts?
As a longtime surfer, we find it ridiculous that you can go to church. And, of course, we understand the severity of the problem and the toxicity of this disease. But you can go to church and you can play golf, but we can't run across the beach and go surfing. And, the open ocean. And here in Jacksonville, for a technical view, it's a sand bottom. The peak breaks everywhere. And the only problem where people can congest would be the pier and maybe the poles in Anna Park. But this thing has gotten so out of proportion. A surfer was shot at in Costa Rica last weekend. and they're giving $1,000 fines for surfing in California. But somehow in Hawaii, they've got some kind of sanity, and they're on a statewide quarantine, and you can go surfing, you can go swimming, because they know better. And if there's ever a really big swell here in Jacksonville, there's going to be 1,000 surfers in the water, and they're going to be unable to enforce it. Mm. And it just, this thing is not being applied professionally or technically or scientifically. It's all political, is what DeSantis did with the churches and the golf courses. And that's my comment.
Okay, thank you, Rick. Charles Gregg, so what about that? The exemption for churches and golf courses. You can still go out and golf.
It does seem that there is some politics playing a long line of how these rules are being administered. It's confusing to the public, and you know, folks like the caller mentioned, you know, it doesn't really seem to be able to make sense that you can, you know, go to the golf course where you can safely practice social distancing there, because I understand that golf courses are allowing people to ride in single carts. They're implementing rules like you can't touch. They remove the rakes from the courses, so you can't touch anything out there. They're not allowing people to touch the flags and the holes. So you can practice social distancing out there, but at the beach where you're able to clearly stay 6 feet apart from other individuals, the beaches are closed. And at a church where you have pews where it's designed for you to sit close together, there's really no way for people to enforce or to monitor how congregations are practicing social distancing. So it is very confusing to the public. And the governor probably needs to clarify what that means for a church congregation.
Yeah.
Instead of leaving it up to the public to determine that and be confused by these practices,
and
help the public understand how it's going to protect them.
And Mark Woods, the governor, is saying he can't run afoul of the Constitution by closing churches. He's saying this is a constitutional question. What are your thoughts about that?
Right, that's going to be an interesting debate. You know, again, you just wish kind of people would think bigger. You know, you hear Tony Boselli yesterday talking about think about everybody else. You know, some churches have got wonderfully creative. Gary Smith did a story the other day about a church in Orange Park that had drive-in church service, where they basically set up a flatbed truck and you know, had people could tune to their radio on their car, and they held the service. You know, everybody's apart, but it's communal. They're honking their horns. You know, something like that I found wonderfully endearing and safe. You know, so I think I'm proud of some of the churches that have done things like that, and it's disappointing to see the one in Tampa doing what it did. And yes, this will be an interesting constitutional debate, though.
Lots of tweets. Anne writes, how do you know that small groups of people on the beach in a boat aren't family members who've all been together for 2 to 3 weeks at home without anyone getting sick? Kevin writes, the problem with saying that a group of people who contracted the virus were all in the same place is that you don't know where that place is until the outbreak occurs. Stephen writes, why are gun and ammo shops considered essential? Here's a tweet from Daniel. Saying you want to go out and surf a big swell right now is selfish. We're all making sacrifices to stay home. He's right that it's been political, but saying the beach is safe is a convenient theory for that caller. Give me a break. So people, obviously, emotions are running high right now as we discuss the response to Florida's safer at home order. It's in effect today. Let's take a quick call from Lewis in Fleming Island. Hi, Lewis. Go ahead.
Hello. How are you doing?
All right. How are you?
I wanted to talk about the local television stations. They could probably demonstrate how you should maybe behave in grocery stores and that sort of thing, put it in illustration. Therefore, you know not to stand too close to the cashier. But then that brings the issue of various grocery stores have different policies. Now, they have set down the 6 foot apart tape on the floor. Mm-hmm. However, what happens between, if I could say the particular stores, Walmart, Winn-Dixie, and Publix, there's a difference between all three. And probably the one that's not as adhering to the guidelines is Publix, because they have baggers. So you go to check out, you stand in front of a cashier, and hopefully not directly in front of the
right
cashier.
And were there plexiglass shields at your store yet?
Shields? Yeah. No, not in our stores here, either Walmart, Winn-Dixie, or Publix.
Okay.
But still, Publix have an added bagger, unlike the other two stores. And therefore, the bagger hands you the bag, you grab the bag hand to hand and place it in your cart. Then, of course, you deal with the cashier. Now, face to face, I prefer not being standing face to face. I'd rather stagger a body's width from the side, left or right, of the cashier that normally where I would be standing in front of. Therefore, it would alleviate the.
So, what would you like to see them do that they're not doing already?
Of course, I would like for them to, for one thing, for Publix to find a way. Not to have a bagger there and hand you the bags. I'd rather for them have the product of anything, if they could find a way to put product directly into the basket, or you could have your own handheld basket,
okay.
basket like I do.
Yeah. Okay, Lewis.
Like
thank you for that. We have another call about grocery stores. Howard on the north side. Go ahead, Howard.
Hey, Miss Melissa. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing well. First time caller.
Great.
Big up to those guys at the port. I go in and out of Telerant a whole lot, and they switch the phone system out to a press button. You know, you don't have to pick up that dirty phone. I'm on the way up from Lakeland right now, and I almost got in a fight with someone at Family Dollar because they won't keep the 6 feet, you know, away.
Oh, right, yeah.
What can I do? What can we do to improve that? I mean, if no one is listening.
Yeah, I know. People have got to listen. I'm sorry that happened to you. And thank you for the call. I hope you'll call again. And stay safe out there, Howard.
I appreciate it.
All right. So,
thank you so much.
So, guys, let's talk about this because we do want to know. Another one of our stories from the week is that Publix actually changed its store policy after we on this program interviewed an anonymous grocery store worker here in Jacksonville. He had been complaining to his manager about the store's policies and also that he wasn't allowed to wear a mask or gloves during his shift to protect himself from COVID-19. Here he is.
We understand the concept of an incubation period that could last up to 2 weeks, and the idea of asymptomatic carriers is really scary for us. We can't guarantee that a customer didn't cough into their hand and touch products while they're trying to shop, and now we possibly have it on our hands. And even if a mask doesn't prevent the particles from getting into our respiratory tract, you know, it does prevent you from touching your face. So at least it would be some kind of measure to help protect associates, if not protect customers from associates.
Now, after that segment aired, Publix shifted its stance. They now say some of their frontline workers are being allowed to wear PPE or personal protective equipment when they're working, masks or gloves. We also reported this week that there is a sick worker at the Publix in Sawgrass and some other sick Publix workers around town at different stores. Charles Griggs, grocery store workers right now are really in a bad way. They are having to go and interact with the public in close quarters. As the caller just said a minute ago, people aren't always observing social distancing guidelines when they go to the grocery store. They are at the mercy of store policies that may or may not allow them to wear protective gear. And so these are folks that aren't getting paid a lot of money, don't always have guaranteed sick leave, and they're keeping us all alive at risk to themselves by providing us with food.
Yeah. In fact, Melissa, you know, just someone was saying that just a few months ago that who would have considered, you know, grocery store operators, you know, cashiers and people who stock clerks to be our front line, on the front line of this response, because they're the ones who are, you know, basically kind of holding up a sense of normalcy here for the public, because we can still go and come as we please to the grocery store where there are no boundaries for us to seek for, you know, limit us for grocery shopping. So these folks are getting paid pretty much next to nothing in most cases, and they're on the front line. They deserve to be protected at all costs. And I think that now that we're going to start to see many of these companies start to kind of heed that as more and more people who are working in those conditions start to advocate for their own safety. And it would be smart for those organizations, those corporations, such as Publix, who did that after they heard from the show, to take additional measures to protect their employees. Because after all, this is the one function that we need to continue to be in place right now as people are practicing these stay-at-home policies.
And Sky LeBron, you've been looking into reports of price gouging at some stores. What did you find out there?
Yeah, we got one listener, and I'm still looking into the story about price gouging at Publix, and one listener saying that she's noticed over the last couple weeks just getting paper towels, that has been a price that has increased by a few dollars, and she said that she lives by very close means, so a few dollars here and there for different products going up over the last couple weeks, it's going to make a big difference in how she fares over the next few weeks going forward. I'm still looking into that story right now, but I think it's important, and something I've been thinking about is a threshold. Is there a threshold before it's considered price gouging? How much can you increase during these times, such as a hurricane or here with a pandemic, before it goes into the price gouging range that you can then report to the price gouging hotline?
And Mark Woods, we're getting lots of comments for all of you guys on our First Coast Connect Facebook page, asking us to talk about how every facility in the state has to report the number of open ICU beds in their hospitals. There are 193 in Duval and apparently a dearth of beds in St. John's County, although we'll double check that. The healthcare officials, hospital workers right now are telling the Times Union and other outlets that they are bracing for a surge of patients, and they expect the peak to hit most likely in early May. As the TU reported yesterday, one patient who's already been in a local ICU is former Jaguars great Tony Baselli. He's on the mend from coronavirus and said it just absolutely scared him beyond anything that's ever happened to him before. He didn't know if he was going to make it. His wife was sick too, although not as sick as he has been. And I think that when a local celebrity is treated, he was treated at Mayo, Mark, that brings it home for people, that this disease can affect anyone, and that people need to take it seriously, as he said, and really give thanks to the healthcare workers who are doing incredible life-saving work right now, and are going to have to do a lot more of it in the coming weeks, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't think we would need any more wake-up calls by now, but if we do, I think Tony Baselli would be one of the ultimate ones for here, a future Hall of Famer, hopefully one of these years. He's 6'7", he's 47 years old, he's still quite healthy, and, it knocked him out and, put him in the hospital, never had reached the point of having to go on a ventilator, but He was in bad shape, and unlike anything he'd ever been in before. So that should tell people this is, yes, the many of the deaths are affecting elderly and people with pre-existing health issues, but if it can do this to Tony Baselli, it can do it to anybody.
Yeah.
And Melissa, we're starting to see. These types of celebrity types emerge in various communities across the country, where someone we know or someone who's well known in that particular community either passes away or gets severely ill. And it is, sort of ringing the bell to bring this pandemic closer to these particular communities. And, we hate to see that when it happens because that means that anyone can get sick, we sort of take that for granted until it happens close to us. But the Baselli situation really sort of brought stuff home because while we've been very aggressive here in Jacksonville and Duval County of taking precautions, it's not enough to ride this thing out.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to George in Jacksonville. Hi, George. Thanks for holding. Go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead, George. Hey, George. I think you had a question about small business loans. Are you still with us? Okay, George, I'll try to answer your question because we're getting other comments about it. Here's one on our Facebook page. John writes, there have been virtual meetings at the city of Jacksonville, especially with the ViStar taxpayer help that will be debated online. Will this money be made available to other lending institutions? Let's ask Charles Griggs. He's on the Charter Revision Commission. Charles, you are. We want to disclose that you are on that commission, although I don't think you have direct involvement in this. But Vistar is working with the city on providing small business help to people who have been overnight thrown out of work and small businesses that have had to close their doors. And people need relief now. And it could not be more serious.
Yes. And just to be clear, the Charter Revision Commission has not been able to meet because of the COVID-19 response and the social distancing guidelines that were put in place early on by the mayor City Council President Scott Wilson. So we haven't been able to meet here recently, but I do anticipate that we'll probably be doing virtual meetings here again soon. However, to the small business support, this is potentially the beginning of what we could see to be some relief for those small businesses here locally, and also to supplement the money that's coming down from the CARES Act, the federal money that was appropriated last week. So hopefully this will be the beginning. Maybe other banks can get on board and participate in a sort of a template like this to support, open the doors for those businesses. You know, we know our restaurants and bars, the people who have been most hit have been people in the hospitality industry and events planning and so forth. And what we're hoping, I think what the concept is, to be able to provide some relief from a local level to those people who are closest to this community. And it's a good thing. Hopefully we'll listen to the debate that happens next week and see what they can get to come out of it. But I think that Vistar probably needs to be applauded for this because they're taking a step up to work with the city on this on this particular project.
Yeah. And Mark Woods, it can't come soon enough given that unemployment claims around the state are skyrocketing and people are having a terrible time even accessing the state's unemployment website. Reports coming out today that it was actually designed to not work, which is unbelievable. But that's the situation for thousands and thousands of Floridians right now that can't get unemployment. It's quite remarkable, isn't it?
Yes, there are already, you're right, issues with this going back to the Rick Scott era, but now they're obviously much more pronounced. A couple of weeks ago I was thinking about trying to write a funny column about, you know, working at home isn't all it's cracked up to be, but, you know, I feel fortunate that I can work from home, that I still have a job. We talked about the folks at Publix or Winn-Dixie, you know, that I'm sitting at a desk in my house, and yes, I've got the dog barking next to me or whatever, but there are a lot of people hurting in a lot of different ways, and so I feel fortunate for what I'm able to do today and, you know, every day.
I do too. And just to clarify for listeners that have asked, here at WJCT, we are almost closed. We are down to a skeleton crew, just a few people, enough to keep the station on the air and getting information out to the public. But by and large, almost everybody who's employed here has gone home. Sky LeBron and I are here and a couple of other people. Michelle Corum on the air in the morning, Sid Hoskinson in the afternoon, and that's about it. So let's take one more call, and then I was hoping to talk to Mark a little bit about a story he had in the Times Union the other day, looking at the flu pandemic here from 100 years ago. But first, let's go to Chris in Mandarin. Hi, Chris. Good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, how are you?
Hello. Good. I just want to address two things that were brought up earlier. One is the bagger. If somebody doesn't want a bagger to help them at Publix, all they have to do is just request that, and the bagger will walk away. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I think it might have even been the same guy. Somebody said that there was somebody standing too close to them and not respecting the 6-foot distance. Just turn to them, cough into your elbow, and ask them if they feel as hot as you feel, and watch how far they run away.
Oh, Chris, you are too funny, although it's actually not funny, but I'm laughing because we got to have a little humor to get through these days. I'm sure that would do the trick, Chris. I bet it would work right away.
That's it.
Okay. Chris, thanks for that. You know, Charles, it's interesting. The other day on the show, we did a segment with a local designer, Bobby Kay. He has shifted his design studio to do nothing but sew cloth masks to give to the public, to sell to the public, and also to donate to healthcare workers. We're hearing that the White House and the CDC may soon start recommending that we all wear masks when we leave our homes. And that would certainly be something we should do if we can handle it and we can find one when we go to the grocery store. And online, you're seeing do-it-yourself tutorials for how to make a mask or how to even take a scarf or a bandana and fashion that into a mask and using hair ties to loop it over your ears. This is where we're headed, and then probably within the next week or so.
And yeah, Melissa, and this is really being recommended to put into practice because we're supposed to treat ourselves as if we have the virus. You know, we're supposed to assume that we have it and we're trying to protect everyone else from it. Because many people out there are asymptomatic. They don't know they have it. They may have had the virus and had no symptoms at all, and they've infected someone, you know, in the public unknowingly. So if we sort of protect ourselves from the public, which is why we're asked to social distance, not because we're trying to protect ourselves from getting the virus from someone else, but more importantly, because we're trying to protect the other person from being infected. So this is where the mask yourself comes into play, because of what we were talking about before in the early stages was that because people didn't have as much information, we only were recommending masks for people who had the virus, or people who were symptomatic, and or people who were taking care of someone else who was symptomatic. So now that's because there's such a because people who are asymptomatic are so widespread, one of the practices to come into play is to just protect yourself for other people.
Right. I mean, that's the idea behind it. Sky LeBron, if I wear a mask, I'm protecting you, and if you wear a mask, you're protecting me. In California, the mayor of Los Angeles is asking everyone there to wear masks. We're maybe a little behind some other states, but that's probably going to be what we're seeing here in the coming days. 100% cotton masks. What if you can find an old T-shirt, you can wrap that around your face, a bandana, a scarf, or if you buy a cloth mask online. This is a small way that we can all work together to flatten the curve of transmission.
Yeah, and we've seen a lot of local businesses, local seamstresses, they've all come together. Many of them are trying to mass produce masks. I wrote a story about it last week, and they're trying to get it out to local hospitals. I think one of the things that is going to be looked at when they're deciding if the CDC is going to spread this out to the nation to wear masks in public is that economic side of it and how quickly people are going to be scouring for those masks, how quickly we're going to see people potentially fighting and trying to get mm-hmm. over on people so that they can get these masks in hand. Because once it becomes a CDC regulation, then everybody is going to take it up to that next level.
Right. So get ahead of the curve, so to speak. You can get a mask for $10 at shopbobbyk.com. For every mask you buy, one is donated to a healthcare worker. Venus, a company on Beach Boulevard, they are making masks. You can buy them from that company. Two local companies doing this work. Okay, speaking of this local community, Mark Woods, you published a fascinating story the other day looking at the Jacksonville of 100 years ago at the close of World War I and everything that was happening in this community as the Spanish flu, as it was called, began its second deadly wave. This is a great read to learn about the city's past. Can you take us through this story?
Sure, yeah. There's kind of a funny story behind that. You know, during the holidays, I was thinking about this last November. During the holidays, we always have to have stories kind of in the can that we can run, and we wanted one for New Year's Day, for Christmas, and I had this idea for New Year's Day, start of a new decade. What was the 1920s in Jacksonville like?
Yeah.
And we had you may recall, kind of a busy November, December with this JEA story.
Right.
And just never got around to it. So I kind of thought, well, it would still work in early January. So my idea for this kind of went back before the pandemic, our current pandemic. But it's interesting, the 1920s,
just as a nation and locally, were many ways the result of kind of these, the Roaring Twenties, the result of kind of the terrible teens that they had on, you know, World War One, and then this deadly pandemic that killed tens of millions of people worldwide, and 600 some thousand in America. And, you know, by 1920, it was basically finally over, and that kind of set the stage for the Roaring Twenties. That, you know, I think, imagine what it's going to be like when this is finally over for us. I think we're going to want to party like it's the Roaring Twenties.
Right. So history kind of not repeating, but rhyming a little bit. You know, as people read through your story, you'll hear some, you'll feel the echoes of what they went through 100 years ago. And there's some great stuff in here. For example, the origin of the phrase, the real McCoy, Mark reports, apparently originated in this area. There was a boat captain, he writes, named William McCoy, who settled in this part of town. When the boat making business went bad, McCoy turned to smuggling whiskey. He became a bootlegger. And apparently, unlike other rum runners, Bill McCoy didn't dilute his products. So Mark says, if you, according to the Jacksonville Historical Society, if you bought smuggled spirits from Captain Bill McCoy, you were getting the real McCoy.
Right.
Only in a
right.
Mark Woods column can you read that kind of detail. So that, I loved reading that.
Yes, Alan Bliss from the Jacksonville Historical Society told me that story. And he prefaced by saying that's one of those that it's kind of hard to figure out how much is fact or fiction, but it makes a, it does make a great story behind the real McCoy.
We should claim it. I mean, let's just own that, Jacksonville. That's a good one. Charles Griggs, your final thoughts as we prepare for a very difficult month ahead, the month of April.
Yeah, Melissa, I was just listening to Mark there and thinking about the state lab here in, that's located here in Jacksonville. There's a health state lab, there's a health department museum over there where which handled, you know, the Department of Health was really born out of the pandemic back in in the beginning of the century in the 1900s. And there's a lot of material over there that kind of talks about and walks through the things that the community had to go through during that time. That's fascinating. And I think that after all of this is over with, you know, we're going to have an opportunity to look back and see how this response reshaped our community as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Just like it did in the early 1900s, and would continue to pay, you know, ask people to pay attention to the things that are going on around them. You know, water seeks its own level, just like this pandemic response is doing. You know, a lot of the things that we saw as normal before are no longer normal now. The economy, everything around it, we just have to make sure that we pay attention to those things and continue to ask questions and hold the leadership accountable for this response. Because there's a lot of common sense things that we need to be practicing that we're not doing.
And that we need to do. And I've got to jump in and thank you. We're about to break. It's Charles Griggs, Mark Woods, Sky LeBron. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Melissa.
Last night, people went outside their homes and clapped for healthcare workers to thank them for all they're doing. We'll take a listen to that, and we'll be back in a moment.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross addresses issues important to our Northeast Florida communities. Our firm is pleased to support WJCT's First Coast Connect.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad. Natural selection's all about cold-hearted competition, right? Well, on the next Radiolab, we explore the evolutionary benefits of kindness.
Sunday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
A lot of companies are pulling ads from TV, leaving some open airtime. So although it might be easier to get the eyeballs,
at the same time, you have to take into account the state that people are in and what you can do to maybe lessen that and comfort them.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, television ad strategy in a global pandemic, next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, how do you prepare for the wave of coronavirus patients coming your way? A hospital in St. Louis tells us what it's learning from others in dealing with shortages, including turning to homemade PPEs, plus how crafty everyday people can make a difference. We'll have instructions on joining them on the next Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
The man in charge of the coronavirus task force asks not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country.
The next 2 weeks, the next 30 days are vital, and we're calling on every American to do their part.
It's been a turning point for those in power. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We hope you'll stay home and stay safe and join us for the Friday News Roundup next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, performance venues are struggling right now. They've had to cancel dozens of upcoming events, but they're doing what they can to adapt. Numa Saselin is president of the Florida Theater, and he's on the line this morning. Hey, Numa, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good to talk to you. A quick reminder that all our guests are by phone right now as we observe social distancing rules. So you're reaching out for help for your employees at the Florida Theater. Tell us about that effort.
So we closed on March 12th, was our last night, and when we closed, we immediately put a whole bunch of people out of work. Our administrative staff remains employed, and we've been taking salary cuts to sustain that as long as we can. But as soon as we closed, all of the people who work shows were out of work. Stagehands, bartenders, security workers, box office workers. If we don't have shows, there's no work for them. So our board treasurer, a guy named Don Cameron, who's a retired CPA and a live music junkie, had been quite taken by what the restaurateur Danny Meyer was trying to do for his people in New York. And he urged us to conceive of something for our show workers, which became the Show Worker Relief Fund. We sent an email out on March 20. And in the next 10 days, over 260 people responded to that call, and we have to date raised a little over $30,000.
Oh, great.
And it's awesome. You know, we have a fairly robust connection with our audience, and we have a big email list and an active social media presence, and, you know, we use that every week to sell them tickets and sell them memberships and sell them drink coupons. So it was really nice to be able to deploy those resources for something philanthropic. And we wrote the first checks this week. We identified 100 people who had worked for us at least once a month over the last 6 months, and all of those people are getting a $250 check in the mail this week, which is not nearly enough, but we hope it helps. And we owe that all to our board members who conceived of the idea and the audience members who wrote checks and sent in donations.
That's fabulous. And you can donate by visiting floridatheater.com. Now, you'll be rescheduling dozens of upcoming events, and we will be checking the schedule for those. You've also started a new project that I was excited to participate in myself. It's called Reading Red Carpet. What's this all about?
We were trying to find ways that we could be engaged with our audience during this, because we mostly present touring artists who come here on buses. They're not local. And our marketing department came up with this idea. So we have local celebrities as well as a couple performers who are reading their favorite children's books on video. And the idea was that we put these up on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, and parents who are home with their kids right now and need different things to do can go there and enjoy a book with a celebrity. I know Dave Koz has done a reading for us. Johnny Van Zant from Lynyrd Skynyrd is doing one. as well as a bunch of other people that folks in Jacksonville will recognize.
Yeah, just check out the YouTube channel and you can see this. It's really cool. My kids are in their teens now, so I had to kind of hunt around in a bookcase to find a book that they had saved from when they were really small that would work for this. And I was excited to finally find one and participate. And so as you move ahead through the next months, you have explained that you've postponed and rescheduled 25 performances. So people will just have to wait a little while to see their favorite acts at the Florida Theater.
That's the good news. We've only had one outright cancellation. Brittany Howard canceled her whole tour, but the other 25 shows have all rescheduled, and Kevin Stone, our program director, has been working overtime, and we have over two dozen other shows that nobody knows about yet, but they're booked. And as soon as we're allowed to be back online, we have a full slate of programs to announce. One thing I've learned in my time here in Jacksonville is Jacksonville likes to go out and have a good time. And as soon as we're all able to get out of the house again and socialize, we're ready to be the venue.
That's right. And go to floridatheater.com to check out the schedule. It's delayed, but it's not off. And also the Show Worker Relief Fund, so that all of the bartenders, stagehands, box office workers, security folks, ticket takers, everybody that helps make your experience at the Florida Theater a great one, you can donate to the relief fund that's set up there so that the Florida Theater can keep its employees on the payroll. Numa Saisalan, you're doing great things at the Florida Theater, and I want to thank you so much for all you do and for joining our show today. And stay safe out there. We'll see you in person hopefully very soon.
Thanks. You too, Melissa.
Okay, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers today. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Jessica Palumbo is our station news director at 89.9. Our digital editor is Bill Bortsfield. And you're a big part of the show always. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And join us today at noon for the Florida Roundup, our live statewide call-in program, where this week we look at the governor's stay-at-home order and problems with Florida's unemployment system, why that has been such a mess. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be back here with our local show Monday at 9 a.m. Stay calm, flatten the curve, and we will all get through this together.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.